Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 10, 2015. Patients are stranded at an ICRC hospital in Upper Nile State as fighting between rebels and South Sudan Army intensifies in Kodok.
Most, if not all, of the people who are able to flee Kodok are on their way or have fled already, seeking safe refuge and food and simple basic needs. The situation in Kodok is extremely difficult today as we speak.
And the head of the UN peacekeepers in South Sudan is pushing for a tougher stance against the two warring sides.
I think what really should be looked at is the possibility of more sanctions towards more leaders. And I do think, and that's what I said also, that there should be a decision about an arms embargo.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, has pulled its medical staff out of the only hospital in Upper Nile town of Kodok after heavy fighting in the town left at least 11 people dead. VOA fellow Tito Justin spoke with an ICRC spokeswoman in Juba and has this report.
Loyale Horanya says an ICRC surgical team was at the hospital in Kodok when fighting broke out on Sunday. She says ICRC staff were forced to leave patients behind when they fled the hospital as the fighting raged nearby. Horanya says reports received by the ICRC indicate that at least 11 people died.
These people were patients in our supported hospital in Kodok, and they have died as a result of not having been attended by qualified surgical staff because our staff has unfortunately had to vacate the premises given the insecurity in Kodok.
Horonia says there are currently no medical personnel in Kodok.
Most, if not all, of the people who are able to flee Kodok are on their way or have fled already, seeking safe refuge and food and simple basic needs. The situation in Kodok is extremely difficult today as we speak.
She says the hospital sustained damage in the fighting. The hospital in Kodok is not the first to be caught in the middle of South Sudan's violence. Last year, a report released by the medical charity Medicines Sans Frontières said scores of people, including patients and medical staff, had been killed in hospitals in South Sudan since the country plunged into conflict in December 2013. The report said direct attacks on medical facilities have crushed the already fragile healthcare system in South Sudan. Horanya reminded the warring sides in South Sudan that medical facilities are protected under international humanitarian law. The Geneva Conventions stated that medical units, quote, may in no circumstances be attacked, but shall at all times be respected and protected by the parties to the conflict, unquote.
It is extremely important in the conduct of those operations to avoid and minimize loss of civilian lives, injury to civilians, and damage to civilian structures.
Medical staff at Kodok Hospital consult with up to 700 patients each week. Around 70 patients were being treated at the hospital when the fighting erupted. The ICRC says their mobile surgical team will only be able to return once the security situation improves. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
The head of the United Nations Department of Peacekeeping says the UN is losing hope that a political solution can be found to the conflict in South Sudan. Avie Latsou is calling on the United Nations to take even tougher measures against South Sudan than the sanctions that were imposed on six military commanders earlier this month. Karen Zaivogo has this report.
The UN peacekeeping chief described South Sudan's slow-moving peace process as an endless cycle of negotiations that never produce a solution.
So I think there is also this sense that both sides, both leaderships, are responsible for this stalemate. But a stalemate which, I have to say again, is immensely costly in terms of human suffering.
Latsou says he wants the United Nations to take tough action against the warring parties in South Sudan.
I think what really should be looked at is the possibility of more sanctions towards more leaders. And I do think, and that's what I said also, that there should be a decision about an arms embargo, because it is really completely questionable that the very meager resources that the country has go into buying more weapons.
The UN peacekeeping chief says if an arms embargo is imposed, it would affect both sides in South Sudan. Ladsu refused to name the country or countries that are allegedly selling weapons to the government and rebels in South Sudan, but says he has personally seen weapons on the ground. Asked whether the United Nations needs to deploy more peacekeepers in South Sudan, Ladsu said it's not a question of numbers of blue helmets on the ground that is making it difficult for the UN to carry out its mandate.
In a country which is so large and which lacks even basic infrastructure, the response is not in numbers. It's more about mobility. So definitely we need more air assets, in particular helicopters. This is the rainy season. Most roads are getting impassable. So if you want to be able to reach various places, in particular the communities that are suffering, you need to be able to go there directly.
Ladsu told the Security Council last month that the government of South Sudan and President Kiir personally have repeatedly denied UN requests to deploy drones and attack helicopters to help better protect civilians displaced by fighting in the country. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel in Washington.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir interviewed V. Ladsu in New York. The former U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Susan Page, had words of praise today for the African Union and its effort to bring an end to the conflict in South Sudan. Ambassador Page told a congressional hearing on the Capitol Hill today that the African Union was instrumental in getting the United Nations to impose travel bans and asset freeze on South Sudanese military commanders.
One of the best actions that took place was the African Union's statement last month actually calling upon the United Nations to institute sanctions. And that really was the triggering action for the United Nations Security Council to take forward that regime, because some of the members of the Council had been reticent to try to move forward when the region had not yet expressly stated it was willing to impose sanctions. And as you know, that the sanctions designations had no opposition. So that's one way that the African nations have made some inroads, in addition to the fact that the Kenyan government, the Ethiopian government, the Ugandans, everyone has actually called the leaders directly, gotten them together, tried to even force them to make compromises, but unfortunately they have not been successful in that actual outreach.
That's former U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Susan Page, speaking at the House of Congressional hearing on the Capitol Hill here in Washington today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese diasporas celebrate Independence Day while others protest at the White House. That story is coming up when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what animal would you keep as a pet and why?
For me, I don't like animals. I don't like, because also I'm an animal. If I keep another animal and also I'm an animal, it will be weird, you know?
I'd love to keep a dog as a pet, and it has always been a family pet for us, because they do a lot of things that I think they have a good connection with human beings sometimes.
Maybe a cat. Cat. Because him and my children love it, they enjoy it, they play with it, so it's good, yeah.
I don't like animals, I don't like insects completely. I don't like any pets, for sure. So I wouldn't keep any.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. There was a sense of remorse as well as celebration among some South Sudanese diaspora who gathered in Washington on the country's fourth Independence Day, while some chose the comfort of a four-star hotel. Others who believe there is little to celebrate protested in front of the White House. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayen Bior has details.
A room at an upscale hotel in Washington, D.C. was filled with laughter and champagne toast, where South Sudanese gathered to celebrate their country's fourth anniversary. South Sudan Ambassador to the U.S., Gareng Ding Akwang, hosted the formal reception featuring unlimited food and drink.
I highly welcome you to this important reception. Today, we are celebrating the fourth anniversary of the independence of the Republic of South Sudan. It is a day of celebrating the great achievements of the people, as well as reflecting on the recent past while moving steadily forward into future.
While the reception was taking place, South Sudanese were also celebrating in Juba and other towns at government-sponsored events. At the same time, many citizens said they had no reason to celebrate as fighting continues and thousands of people go hungry. That was the message across town at a protest in front of the White House on Wednesday and Thursday. About 20 people representing the SPLM in opposition were waving South Sudan flags and carrying anti-President Kiir signs while chanting pro-South Sudan messages.
Long live South Sudan!
Long live Southern Sudan people!
Long live South Sudan people!
South Sudanese American Nyajo Katoch says she came to Washington from the eastern state of Maine to draw attention to the atrocities being committed against women and children.
As we speak, there are children that are displaced from their homes. There are mothers that are being raped. There are innocent civilians that are getting killed. There has been over 30,000 people that have been killed.
Mariano Mawen was one of a handful of Dinkas at the Nuer-dominated rally. He says it's important that all of South Sudan's tribes come together to call for peace.
We need to move on. You know, we are in a position to accept the peace in our country. But if the forgiveness decide to decline the peace, what do we do?
Nyamun Mashar, another South Sudanese American from Maine, recited an original poem she wrote to describe her fears about South Sudan's future.
In my mind's eye, I see that child with a gun in his hand, demonized by the monsters that gave him that gun. And oh my God, I pray in another village, another mother does not fall victim to my son.
Tens of thousands of South Sudanese pounds were spent on various anniversary celebrations across South Sudan and here in Washington yesterday. Government officials defended the decision, saying it's important to celebrate their independence, and after all, it's what the people wanted. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Wau. A day after the fourth independence anniversary, people across the country are returning to their normal routines. Yesterday, thousands celebrated in Western Bahr El Ghazal's Wau Stadium and in Bor Town. Today, most of the same people will struggle to put food on the table. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Wau.
Colorful South Sudanese flags fluttered in the wind everywhere in towns like Wau and Bor yesterday, where government-sponsored Independence Day celebrations were held. Today, public buildings are still closed for the holiday, but in the marketplace, it is back to business. In Wau Market, people are bargaining for food and other goods. Traders hope they will earn enough to buy more goods for the next day. Shoppers hope they will be able to negotiate a better price for food to feed their families as prices continue to rise. Bakita Hassan was buying meat and cassava, lives in Wau Joe Market for her family's lunch. She says though she was excited yesterday, today she is back to making every pound stretch.
Thank God, I celebrated peacefully, and now I am back in the market to buy food items, even though prices are high.
Hassan says President Salva Kiir's speech calling for peace and patience gave her a little hope, but not enough to believe changes is going to happen soon. Wau Market customer Roselyn Anthony says even though prices are high, she believes they will start to fall one day soon.
I buy okra to make some milk at home. Today people are very many. Even yesterday some shops are closed, but today everything is beer okay. Price is so high, but we are just pushing ahead like that.
Faisal Abdu sells electronics in Wau's Joe Market. He says business is not as good as yesterday, but he has made 150 South Sudanese pounds selling mobile phones so far today.
I sell electronic gadgets ranging from 15 to 25 pounds. I was able to receive 3 customers, and up to now, I have something like 100 pounds.
During yesterday's Independence Day event in Bor, Jonglei State Caretaker Governor John Kong Nyon said although Jonglei has been hit hard by the conflict, including suffering thousands of killings and massive displacement, life is returning to normal.
Despite the difficulties of time, the security situation in Jonglei State is stable and promising. Our people are returning to their homes in huge numbers and life has returned to normal. Our main market is operating and business are as usual.
Bor resident Majok Mawen says South Sudanese people are desperate for peace. As he watched traditional dancing during yesterday's Independence Day activities, Mawen said if peace were reached on a national level, he believes it would fuel peace and reconciliation between different ethnic communities.
Ever South Sudanese today feel the sense of belonging. They feel like this is their country, but the expectation of our people are high. Apart from development, they also expect peace to come as soon as possible.
In his Independence Day message, Governor Zakaria urged all citizens to be more productive members of society.
Independence is a political achievement. Now it is you to build South Sudan to be economically independent. That is why patriotic citizen asks what to do for the country, not what the country is supposed to do for her or him.
The governor urged all South Sudanese, including those that oppose his government, to become good patriotic citizens. But many citizens feel their government has let them down. They want the two warring parties to stop talking about peace and achieve peace by laying down their weapons and reaching an agreement. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in Wau.
Jacob Ache contributed to this report from Bor. Moving now to Juba, FM radio stations and newspapers are flourishing throughout South Sudan in spite of the challenges including lack of funding, electricity, equipment, and the ever-present threat of government censorship. Owners and operators of these media groups believe they play an important role in fostering peace and development by keeping the public informed. Mungume Debs Rakarinj files this report for VOA News from Juba.
It is the start of the Music While You Work show, and listeners are calling in to ask hosts Janet and Mark to play their favorite songs or to discuss current events like South Sudan's 4th anniversary of independence.
As we are approaching the Independence Day, I can't wait for that day.
The baby South Sudan.
The baby South Sudan.
Oh, yes. Oh. And if you're celebrating your baby, you make sure you embrace. Mm-hmm. You give love.
Launched in 2013, City FM won the Chamber of Commerce Award last year for Best Commercial Radio in South Sudan. Ogwang John Robert is marketing manager for Galaxy Nightclub. He says Music While You Work is his favorite show. But he says City FM provides more than just lively tunes and provocative conversations. Last August, when South Sudan's economy was in crisis, Ogwang watched as profits from his club fell from £50,000 a week to less than £30,000. To try to stop the downslide, Ogwang launched promotion offers for the nightclub on City FM.
Then after advertisement, I start seeing the, some changes coming, some changes coming. And when this continue coming, the changes continue coming, I couldn't also stop going to the radios to advertise because I saw the change.
Ogwang says his nightclub's profits not only rose but exceeded his target. The success of Ogwang's ad campaign in turning around his club's business illustrates the positive role media can play in South Sudan. Radio stations inform and entertain listeners and can play a role in development and promoting economic growth. But broadcasting what is perceived by the government to be the wrong message can make radio stations a target for censors. Last year, Information Minister Michael Makuei said media outlets that carry interviews with rebels are violating the law. The government has also come down hard on media outlets that show the government in a bad light. A Catholic radio station was shut down and its news editor was detained last August after the station aired a Catholic radio station was shut down and its news editor was detained last August after the station aired a report that the government said accused the army of starting new clashes in interstate. Newspapers have also been at the receiving end of censorship. Many have had their print runs confiscated after running stories that fell foul of the government. Veteran journalist Alfred Taban is the proprietor of the Juba Monitor, one of the most popular English language newspapers in South Sudan. He says national security forces have shut down his paper 5 times since South Sudan's conflict began in December 2013. But he says, in spite of the intimidation, he's not about to give up on putting out a paper that he believes helps to inform and educate people.
The work of journalism in this country, it may be a bit frightening, but it is also very exciting. Media is extremely important in building any young nation. And South Sudan is the youngest. And indeed, the media has a big role to play in shaping the future of this country.
South Sudan's Minister of Telecommunications, Rebecca Joshua Okwachi, says journalists have a responsibility to educate the public. But she says they must abide by their profession's code of ethics as they do their work.
Credibility does not come when you are resting in the shade. You have to be running around. And I'm telling the fellow journalists, please explore new areas. Look at the facts. Cross-check. Don't go on air when you are not sure. That will land you in trouble.
This is Equator Radio, 89.4 FM. Equator Radio, 89.4 FM, where change happens.
One of the latest FM stations to set up shop in South Sudan started broadcasting just this week. Equator Radio is part of the Equator Broadcasting Corporation, or EBC, an independent media group that is funded by Central Equatorial State. George Elnai Latio, the Director of Training and Research at EBC, says his team wants to educate the public.
We want to educate people about the goodness of dialogue. People could not just go for conflicts as a solution to problems because we're killing each other.
But he says the ongoing conflict makes it hard for media to operate in some of the remote areas of the country. Akim Mugisa, the public relations manager at City FM, says his station also strives to educate the public. He says they have decided to dedicate 75% of their programming to providing the public with an avenue for learning English.
We use that chance for the people who may not understand English to start learning English through the radio here. Because when they keep listening, they understand what is being discussed. And they, even when they call us, we can have a chat with them in English briefly. Then they say, let them speak in the local language.
Media outlets also create jobs. Mugisa says City FM has hired 50 South Sudanese staff since 2013. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A senior State Department official says today that an interim nuclear agreement between Iran and world powers will be extended through Monday to provide negotiators in Vienna more time for talks on a comprehensive deal. The official said, quote, to allow for the additional time to negotiate, we are taking the necessary technical steps for the measures of the joint plan of action to remain in place through July 13th, end quote. The interim agreement was reached in April. An original June 30th deadline for a final deal has already passed. Heads of state, ministers, and representatives from more than 190 countries will gather in Ethiopia next week to decide on a financial framework to realize the new United Nations development goals. Trillions of dollars are needed to support the effort, according to UN officials. Starting on Monday, around 7,000 delegates will meet at the Financing for Development Conference. After the United Nations Millennium Development Goals expire later this year, the new Sustainable Development Goals will take effect. And finally, one of seven FIFA officials arrested in Zurich as part of an American corruption investigation has now agreed to be extradited to the United States. The official who initially had contested his extradition agreed to be extradited yesterday. Swiss officials said they would not give details about when the unnamed FIFA official would be handed over. Under Swiss law, he must be collected by a U.S. police escort and then taken to the United States within 10 days. The official is one of seven, all from South America or the CONCACAF zone of North and Central America and the Caribbean, arrested in a dawn raid on a Zurich hotel room on May 27th. The men are accused by U.S. authorities of involvement in more than $150 million of bribes given for marketing deals for football tournaments in both North and South America. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Friday. We'll leave you with the song Salah by Kebas featuring Krisha C.
Tell. Yeah, K-Boss and Trisha C, and observing, yeah, let's pray, yeah, let's pray.
Kelenitna selile Allah, bin beletna bisalam. Brother, you should never bother. Anything is possible. Salam is possible. No, no more gunshots in the night. No, no more fights. Only likes. I shall keep the wallet sharp. K bars, massive mic. Fibidaya, I know young boy, good now. Our vision. K blue, AKG, and my men, and the local ceasefire. Now me and Trisha say, pray. Jake Terra, pray. My man Evans, pray.
We have been listening to Kebas featuring Trisha C with the song Salah. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Please join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.